Today is May 4th, 2016, and this is episode number 358 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, the guy who gets John Keats bald head wax stuff. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@MacObserver.com.
And if you need a photo of Brian getting John's head wax stuff, just let Brian know. He'll take care of that for you.
On a completely unrelated note, joining us today is John Keith, the devil's advocate.
I'm all buffed and shy now, so thanks for that, Brian.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You know that I love you deeply.
I don't think I can drink this image away.
Do you wax your head, John?
What are you talking about? I just shave it. Sometimes. I follow the same regime. If I don't feel like shaving, none of it gets shaved. Although when I go visit my girlfriend, she likes me to be more peach fuzzy, so I'll grow it out. It's great not having a standard day job, so I don't have to care about it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, we have gotten this off on a fantastic...
I just feel uncomfortable, but that's okay.
And we're doing something we normally don't do. We're actually looking at each other in video, but we're not recording it video wise. So I'm afraid that our listeners can't enjoy the
gestures we're making towards one another.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Those would be the ones. Yes.
Rightio. So the reason why we have Mr. Keat with us, first of all, he's always a fantastic guest, but secondly, he wrote a piece on, Monday, that we were going to talk about.
What is this piece, Brian, that you speak of?
John, why don't you tell us, actually? Why don't you tell us your thesis here?
Sure. The thesis is Apple has failed to scale. Scale up with size of its employees relative to the output that the company has with regard to its products. So the company, you know, one of its memes to the point where it's just empty marketing speech that I don't take seriously anymore is the cult of product, right? You talk to any Apple executive, it's like, oh, the product is the only thing that's important. Why? Because Steve Jobs said so, right? Even though we're not following what Steve Jobs says, but it's a product-driven company, and that's all that counts. So you would think that the measure is, well, how many products are they putting out that are nice and successful and beloved? And if you look back at 2008, I think, Apple was regularly putting out new Mac Pros, new iMacs, new MacBook Pros. They were releasing meaningful updates to their software. Even iWork and iLife, they were putting out new iPods every year. They also put out revisions of the iPhone and the operating system. And every year, you know, the metronome would move and there'd be a whole new set of releases under Steve Jobs back then. Since 2008, the company's about quadrupled in size and it's releasing less product than ever before. The software has been largely left to decay. Some of it's been outright just dropped.
Like the consumer software, the operating system clearly have been updated every year.
Yeah, the Aperture, but tons of features have been dropped from the iWork and iLife suites.
When was the last time those got updated?
They get minor revisions. Hey, you know, it's nice that they finally put back compatibility in Pages from the old 2006 and 8 releases of Pages. Now we'll read in Pages. So that's great. I mean, those are killer features. I know that the public is roaring with what new creative things are going to be able to do with that. So they've been, you know, working real hard on keeping these fresh. So the level of product output, if you look at the MacBooks, the MacBook Pros, the iMac is still sporting a pathetic 3 terabyte drive. When you could get an 8 terabyte drive today for $200. And that's its most up-to-date machine. So the Mac has just been left to atrophy. The latest Thunderbolt display is from 2011. The Mac Pro hasn't been updated since December 2013.
Pages 5, we're on 561 right now. Pages 5 was released in 2013.
Yeah. So it's just been, no updates in any meaningful way on the Mac, which is kind of the date that brought them to the dance. And everything's been concentrating on the iPhone. And even if you look at the iPhone, the latest rumors, if true, they're not going to bother to update the form factor of the iPhone 6, which is now two generations old. And it's also kind of, befuddling, because the iPhone is more than a it's less of a technology play today than it is a fashion statement, particularly for emerging markets like India and China and Russia. Most, those people want to show you that, hey, I've arrived. I've got the new iPhone. It's got the new color. It's got the new form factor. And if you don't give them that, then, the reasons for updating and upgrading get diminished. But more than that is they've got more than 4x the employees and the production is down. What's up with that?
That's where you got me. When we were talking about this piece before you actually wrote it, or actually maybe when you were drafting it, that's where you hooked me, because I really hadn't thought of it in those terms. When I look at Apple, generally speaking, I think that, first of all, I'm actually confident that there are new products that are going to come out, and new products are going to come out before the Apple Card gets released. We're going to see stuff in between now and then. And, I'm certainly was aware of how at least some aspects of the Mac product line are languishing. But where you got me was this idea that Apple has quadrupled its workflow or workforce, and we're not seeing any updates to the Mac.
And they're doing less with more.
They're doing less with more.
Now, their revenues, those have increased.
And Mac sales have increased during that time.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm bringing this up not because I want to say, oh, but here's the excuse. I'm just curious, how does that fit in with
It fits in with an old narrative, right? And it dovetails into Brian's really awesome interview of John Sculley. Sculley helped, oust Jobs, depending upon whose version of history you remember, in 1985. And the Mac was introduced in 84, and it was at the beginning of its product cycle. And Sculley rightly toots his own horn in that in the time before he was kicked out, he got Apple to be the number one PC maker in the world, ahead of IBM at one point, even in taking the Mac and milking it, right? Milking it for all it's worth and out of its product cycle. So, when you lose the visionary, there's still some lag. And in fact, Sculley made way more money than Jobs ever did with the Mac in milking that product line out. So for Apple. So the fact that we're still seeing great sales is
just momentum?
It's momentum, and we're in a good part of the product cycle, but now we're getting towards the end of it, and there haven't been meaningful updates. I would take at this point non-meaningful updates, like, hey, throw us a bone, throw in the latest rev of Xeon into the Mac Pro. How about throw in at least a 5 terabyte drive into an iMac? Minimum processor bumps haven't even been made. The products have just been languishing. So selling a ton doesn't mean that's necessarily a reward for keeping the line fresh.
We got to clarify there. For one thing, Apple has done a pretty good job with its mobile product line. So the MacBook, whether or not you care for that particular form factor, represents several enormous strides forward. The MacBook Air has continued to evolve. The MacBook Pro, less so, but has seen several updates.
How has the MacBook Air evolved? They finally gave it the minimus RAM bump last time.
It's gotten the things you just talked about, the processor upgrades and RAM upgrades and storage upgrades too, and video card upgrades. And battery life upgrades.
So,
It has evolved.
The cycles there are pretty long in the tooth, too. They're not nearly as fast as other players. And they're not as regular as they used to be back in 2008, where you just knew, like, every cycle it was going to hit. Now it's just kind of ad hoc. Secondary stats.
So I have a question for you. And this is about the MacBook. Is it possible that the MacBook was released as a test bed, so Apple could see how these new technologies work that they've put only in that model, And now that they have a year of that model on the market, which also gave a year for third parties to start making accessories that use USB-C, is Apple going to give us a significant upgrade to the MacBook Pro? And they use the MacBook as the setup for that.
I think the MacBook exists in and of itself to be its own thing. It's Apple going further after the market that wants that sort of ultra portable thing. And Apple does always experiment with one product line for things that will eventually be brought to other product lines, but I don't think that's the purpose of the MacBook.
And Jeff, you know, I think there's some value to what you're saying in that, hey, you want to leverage it, but this is a company that should be able to do more, right? It shouldn't be like, oh, let's bite our nails. Will this one product work okay that we're going to risk putting out some other products, or at least refreshing those other products? There's no reason you just don't refresh a 2011 screen at this point. I mean, it's
kind of baffled by that.
A sad joke. It's an embarrassment.
You're talking about the Thunderbolt display.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been updated to a 4K display 20 times over, and it's just decay and lack of care.
All right, so let's actually talk about that. So I just made the case that Apple has been updating the portable line. The iMac has also seen some significant improvements. The 5K display was obviously incredibly impressive. You made the point that there are much bigger drives available for very little cost, and those drives not only aren't available at that cost, they're not available at all. Some significant strides have been made in larger and much cheaper SSDs, and those aren't available in the iMac either. Mm-hmm. But then you've got the Mac Pro line, which hasn't been touched since it was
introduced
in 2013. And the Thunderbolt display, which is still being offered but hasn't been updated to even a 4K model, let alone a 5K model like we have in the iMac, which is right in front of me, this beautiful display that's in front of me. And that's where Apple has particularly languished, is on the desktop.
And you'll hear the apologists say, well, they couldn't get 5K just right, like if there's something wrong with shipping a 4K display in the meantime. But even then, you're like, you got to be kidding me. Apple is the home of miserable video dongles. It's where all of them go to live and die. Every freaking display they've ever released has some massive octopus, a combo cable that splits into 13 other cables as it comes out, all with customer connectors. And, you know, Dell went through the amazing technology of slamming two display port cables out of a 5K display so it plugs in and works. And Apple wasn't capable of doing this. It had nothing to do with that. They just didn't want to do it because they've got, you know, more important watch things to do. You know, I can't wait for another Apple event to showcase their incredible innovation in Apple wristwatch straps. They are going to innovate themselves into a new future with Apple wrist straps, watch straps. It's going to be amazing. Three more revisions, and it's going to be a revolution. It's a joke.
Before we started recording, by the way, Jeff and I spent about 10 minutes winding John up so that, you know, he could start going.
Can you taste my bitterness?
I can, and I'm with you too. I mean, the Mac Pro, now we've talked about the Mac Pro before. You, of course, wrote a lovely rant about the Mac Pro, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 months ago?
Yeah.
Does that sound about right? And that is, so part of your thesis for, and I originally said we put it out on Monday, we actually put it out on Tuesday. Part of your thesis in that piece is that it's important for Apple to not cast aside the professional users, the power users, and the creative professional users, because they are tastemakers and trendsetters. And when I start thinking about that, it just makes me all the angrier that the Mac Pro hasn't been touched. And not only has it not been touched, I mean, has the price dropped? Actually, there was a price drop.
No, it's the most offensive thing ever. It's a 2013 machine still at the original price. It hasn't been reduced. There's some sales on it that third-party vendors have, but the Apple's still selling it for full boat. It's a joke.
Still started at $29.99?
It's almost an IQ test. Oh, you were stupid enough to pay full price 3 years later? Idiot.
I can't. I mean, I personally, so when I went to get a new Mac to replace my 2007 Mac Pro, which is astounding that it was still working. But when I went to replace that, I ended up getting the iMac. I could not stomach the idea of paying for a device that had been introduced in 2.5 years ago and not updated since.
Yep.
Well, this is when I bought it, at least, because I bought my iMac in December. I couldn't stomach the idea of paying full price. It's offensive. And it doesn't make any sense. And that again, that brings me back to the hook that John had in me for this piece. It's that since 2008, Apple has quadrupled its workforce. Now, some of those people are retail employees, but we know that Apple has been adding engineers and of all sorts and all kinds of employees at the corporate level as well. You know, we've covered many stories about all the office space that Apple is gobbling up all over the South Bay. We know that Apple has all these people, and yet, as John says, they're releasing less and less and less on the Mac, and it's really annoying and frustrating.
And you know, it's not like they're producing that much more on the purely mobile side, where they're still, you know, relatively following the metronome. Every year you get a new iPhone, which is great. But it's not like they're doing more, you know.
Actually confident that Apple is doing things that we're going to be seeing in the next few years.
Listen, you know, I don't want to get into like a negative, you know, festival here in that like somehow Apple's in trouble or whatever. That's a joke. They make more money than, you know, most countries on earth. They're fine. And it's clear they're going to have some new releases of things come WWDC in June. And since Apple can't keep a secret on any hardware they ever produce anymore, because no one there has the guts to actually slap their vendors that they work with and suppliers to keep their mouths shut, we pretty much know from the rumors that likely there's going to be a 13-inch and a 15-inch MacBook Pro that follows the footsteps of the current MacBook line. And those will be sweet and nice. But it's still the point. Point is that they've got so much more talent, so many more people, and yes, they're in different areas, but it's clear they have more in all areas at this point, and they're just not capable of scaling and doing. They can't chew gum and walk at the same time. It's the same A team that gets slapped off to do everything, and they can't put in a B team while the A team is off making the Apple Watch and doing important stuff like making new wrist straps for the Apple Watch. You've got to keep our priorities straight in life and do an hour presentation on those, because that's not boring. It's totally awesome and engaging, by the way. But beyond doing that, get a B team in just to do mediocre processor updates, to go from, you know, 1.8 to 2.1 gigahertz or some, you know, menial stuff like that. They haven't figured that out. And what's worse is, you know, Tim Cook's supposed to be the operational guy. He should be able to get a structure in to get a B team in to be able to do B team level updates that don't wreck things and just keep things going orderly while the A team goes on and does whatever its next, you know, wrist strap innovation demands of that team. You know, we need them to be free to do that work.
Let's sort of sidestep over to the other part of your premise, which is that that while sales and profits generated from Apple's Pro line in particular, Apple's Mac Pro line in particular, even sales to professional users, including it with the iMac, because a lot of professionals can use the iMac all day long and be well serviced. Mm-hmm. The profits from those folks don't amount to much of anything in Apple's big grand scheme of things. But part of your premise, John, is that the impact that these people have in terms of the halo effect is far outsizes their direct contribution to Apple's profits.
So, yeah, let me break. I think at least right off the top of my head, there are two parts to that issue. One is, first of all, you know, Apple, if anything, gets lambasted and criticized that they're a one product company. So you don't want to let a very legitimate other part. Yeah, it's not the majority, or it's not even a huge portion anymore, but it's still a legitimate business to sell Macs, and it's a really good and profitable one that they have. So to let that languish and die would just be morbidly stupid, just from the whole shareholder or fiduciary duty kind of level of things.
And Apple does make money from its Mac. It makes quite a bit of money. It actually makes enough money that it makes the kind of money that the rest of the PC industry wishes it could make. As a matter of fact, it makes more profits on the Mac, I believe, than the rest of the PC industry does. Could be wrong on that.
It's something pretty impressive. Yeah,
there's no one making money on computers like Apple is, which is crazy considering what a small part of their business it is. And here we are going on about how we haven't seen significant updates to their products in quite a while.
Yeah. And so it's just a silly thing to ignore. And by the way, if you're looking at a computer and you can't figure out new innovations other than, the new pink color that you're going to strap to it, or that making it a sliver thinner, you've lost something. There's plenty of innovations. I could go on with some remedial ones, like, hey, I'm sick of typing in my password. How obvious is it to strap Touch ID to this thing? Tim Cook, like Steve Jobs before him, is good at saying, look at the funny monkey, and distracting people and saying no one wants to combine a toaster and a refrigerator. But the reality is convertibles like the Surface Book are good ideas. It's very much like before the iPhone came out, people were saying, oh, you don't want a convergence device. Who would want a convergence device? You want to have a phone be a phone and an MP3 player be an MP3 player. And those people were idiots, and they were all pundits saying this idiotic thing.
And they all use iPhones now.
Yeah, and they all use iPhones now, or some clear derivative thereof. It was just getting the recipe right. And it's the same thing for these convertibles. The use factor is great, and you don't have to look very far. Look at all the stupid products for the iPad that make it look like a laptop. Why? Because people want it. There's a need. Now, the recipe that Windows has is pretty UI atrocious, but at least they're trying. They're trying to do something other than, what was Apple's big achievement? They made the iPad bigger and slapped a stylus onto it. Man, I'm just going to repeat what I said sarcastically in my article. Oh, way to set the bar real high there, guys. Reach for the stars. Reach for the stars.
Now, in defense of the iPad Pro, holy crap.
Which iPad Pro?
The iPad Pro 12.
You mean iPad Pro parentheses 12.9 inches, close parentheses?
Pro 12.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyhow, so when I got the Pro 12 model iPad, that completely changed how I use a tablet device. And it took the iPad product line for me from being this satellite device that I'm doing other things on, to being something that in many situations can actually be a laptop replacement for me. And it fundamentally changed many things about how I deal with mobile computing.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And part of that may be because I spend a lot of time using my iPad as an artistic tool. So the stylus is actually a great addition for me. And I am a stylus junkie.
And Apple did a lot of really innovative stuff with that stylus.
Yeah,
I don't think it's fair.
Not John, the way it charges, but yes.
So let me, fair enough.
I don't think it's fair, John, to dismiss Apple Pencil and iPad Pro, either parenthetical 12.9 close parenthetical or parenthetical 9.7 inch close parentheses too. I don't think it's fair to disparage either one of those as not being.
Watch me be unfair. First of all, you got to give me a break. The big innovation in styluses. There were styluses that did tilt before, that did pressure sensitivity. They made it smoother because they control both pieces, and kudos for them. There's no denying that. And I don't mean to diminish, Jeff. If you're an artist, it's clear that you can do real creation on those things. But I'm pretty sure, Jeff, if I said you could only have one device and I put a gun to your head and you could only get work done on one device, you're going to keep a laptop, much like Brian admitted in the last one of the last shows, even though the majority of the time he prefers using the iPad, because if you have to create, you still can't do it outside of the creative, you know, actual artistic work that you do, drawing and whatnot. It's very clear that the iPad is great there. But if you need to make a PowerPoint presentation, if you need to actually write a long piece article or something like that, you're still going to need that. And that's why those convertibles that Microsoft is working on are compelling in concept. Their implementation for me is atrocious. For some people, they find it fine. But again, they're going towards the right thing. It's very clear at some point Apple's going to get there. And I think it's just another head fake, much like when Steve Jobs says you're not going to have video on an iPod. And then, you know, a year later, you had video on an iPod. I think that toaster refrigerator example is baloney. It's very clear it's going to go there at some point. It's a question of who gets the recipe right at what point. So which not to say that there are going to be demographics that can get work done. Heck, a lot of people, all they do is surf and look at their email. So the original iPad was fine for them as a primary machine as well. But for people that are creatives, outside of just actual doing artwork because you're an illustrator or something like that, you still need a machine that lets you do real heavy lifting. And the iPad ain't it, in my opinion.
You know, the iPad Pro, where it falls down for me, is podcasting. There's no reasonable way to record a show like we are right now, multiple people, multiple sources, multiple locations on an iPad. For that, I still have to use a Mac, and I don't see that changing for a while. But for a lot of the other things that I do, a lot of the other content creation that I do today, which does include some photo editing on the iPad, yeah, I can actually do it. And I am more than happy to say I'm surprised I can do as much as I can on my iPad Pro. But there you go. I can do a lot on my iPad Pro. And the big thing that stops me from using it as a primary device at, say, like a conference or trade show, podcasting.
I don't want to type a lot on an iPad or a toaster fridge.
Yeah. Anyway, the point being, though, is that there isn't a whole heck of a lot of innovation going on the Mac, and the lack of vision to do something interesting and creative could be worrying. You know, the other point to back off a little bit on my aggressive hate fest here on Apple is that you know, good things take time, and the gap of between, you know, not everything needs to be a revolution every day, and that's an unreasonable expectation. The gap between the iPhone and the iPod, which were kind of two big, you know, threshold developments on the hardware side, was 6 years. A 6 year cap, right? So not everything is coming out every year, and it's enough just to keep things fresh, at least on an updating basis. And it is worrying that they can't scale to do that. That the watch was such a distraction that everything else kind of atrophied in its wake.
I want to put a finer point on that. It's distressing that they can't scale despite having scaled.
Yeah,
what are all those people doing? It'd be one thing if Apple was still the same size, and we're sitting, and you know, we might be sitting here talking about, you know, what is Apple going to do with all that money? But the reality is that Apple has spent a lot of money. Apple's spending a lot of money on R&D. Apple has definitely hired a lot of people, and it is hard to discern from the outside what they're doing with those people. I assume many of them are working on new products, but I would like to see the existing products not cast aside. And that's what I feel like is happening to the Mac. I mean, I don't know. You never actually say that, John, but that's my worry, is that the Mac is being cast aside, and I think a lot of Mac users share that worry.
Yeah, and again, it's a mistake because I think there is a in which I didn't answer your question that you started my last little rant bit on, which was how big of an influence do those tastemakers and creatives have? And they do. Like, who the heck wants to, you know, follow some accounting wonk? Like, oh, I want to be like that person. Apple's always showing creative stuff going on in their commercials, even tangentially, right? The Onions commercial with someone being creative and making a video. It's about that. People aspire to be like music makers or video makers. And these power users, do have an influence. And look, anyone that is IT support for their family knows this to be the truth. It's just, this is self-evident. If you're the person taking care of everyone in your family and you're the tech guru of your friends, you have a disproportionate effect on the sales of about, you know, whatever that circle of friends is. Maybe it's in family. Maybe it's 10 people. Maybe it's 15 people. For some of these tastemakers, it may be hundreds of people. And again, this is self-evident because you have tastemakers like this in social media making bank. They're getting product placements and advertising that they're being put on their Facebook feeds and all that stuff because they do influence things. So if you lose this group of the techno elite, and there's pretty interesting, very anecdotal, but interesting evidence in those Mac forums. And the one that I cited to in an article, the Mac Rumors Mac Pro Forum, is probably the largest kind of pro forum like that out there. And that you have such a large number of people there moving, anecdotal, not statistically relevant, all that stuff, very true, but it is concerning. And when there's enough of a threshold of those folks that walk away, it's a problem. If you believe that the halo effect helped get Apple going and the halo effect moved people, from iPods and iPhones to the Mac, connection between the devices has some effect. Yeah, well, getting rid of people that are such influencers could have a negative halo effect. And there's a kind of a halo stink effect. If the laptops and desktops are old and stale, you know, that stink could start to encroach on other products that Apple make, and you don't want that association to start to develop. So that's another word.
John, you mentioned the Mac Rumor forums where people are lamenting the lack of updates for the Mac Pro line and that they're leaving and getting other computers. Mm-hmm. This is actually something that Hewlett Packard has been playing, or HP has been playing on, for a few years now with their Z series workstations. They are actively courting Mac Pro users who need a new machine, who need the latest and greatest hardware and horsepower to be able to do whatever their task is. So Hewlett Packard or HP, they have this whole program set up that caters to the Mac Pro users that need a new machine and are not going to buy a 3-year-old model at current computer prices.
Absolutely true. And there were some interesting posts. You know, there are machines out there right now you can get from HP that have 72 cores, that have a terabyte of RAM. Not that I expect Apple to, you know, necessarily need to compete at those crazy levels, but it just shows you the draw for some of these folks. And it's worse than that, Jeff, because one of the new HP machines is a built-in all-in-one, and it has Xeons in it. And it's more user reconfigurable than the trash can Mac, which is not an all-in-one. So it tells you, and folks are bemoaning that on those forums. And yeah, it's not a theoretical that these people might move. They are moving, have moved. Sorry, got a little activity going here.
You're just a popular man.
Yeah, it's not a question of can they move, a theoretical. They are moving, and what's worse is if you read the tone of their posts, they're all miserable. They're like, I'm going against every fiber in my being. I don't want to leave the Mac. I love the operating system, but they've left me no choice. That is the sentiment. These are not people that are biofilled towards Apple. They love Apple. Some of these folks have been using Macs since the 80s, and they love it, and they're not leaving willingly.
It's getting to the point where a lot of professionals, especially video professionals, people are doing compositing effects and editing and whatnot, and not to mention 3D rendering, any kind of heavy CPU intensive activity. It's getting to the point where you actually would be irresponsible to stay on the Mac, or where you can't afford to because your competition is going to be able to kick your butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a serious problem.
It's a serious problem. It is a very serious problem. And the scientific community, too. I mean, Apple is always sort of like love the science community and yet taking a big dump on them at the same time. They're also getting to the point where they'd be irresponsible to stick with the Mac.
So let me get a little nostalgic with you guys. Were you using Macs around when they first came out, like in 84? Did you get to use the Lisa in 83 when it first came out?
I did get to play with the Lisa.
So
I did not.
What's really interesting about the Lisa, the original OS was on Xenix, and it actually could multitask before they updated its system. But it had like a basic Mac Draw program on there. It didn't have Mac Paint, but it had Mac Draw. Well, the first time I used it, my brain just melted, and I'm like, this is clear. This is the total future. And you had such like, because I guess I'm a geek, you know, natural enthusiasm for the platform. And you only get a few of those moments in life, at least I have, where you're like, oh my gosh, it's so abundantly clear. This is how everything in the world's going to work. And it's just great and enthusiastic. Did you have that experience, Jeff, like when you first tinkered around with it?
Yeah, I was taken aback because I felt like I was experiencing the future. And not like in a metaphorical sense, but like someone put me in a time machine and took me to a future generation and sat me down in front of their technology. I mean, it was that powerful.
I had a similar feeling, and almost every program I used was like this amazing revelation of wonder and possibility. And I remember the first time I used Mac Paint, I'm like blown away. This is so awesome, so easy, so intuitive, and so necessary and essential. It is the very most profoundly wonderful part of the Apple DNA where I didn't know that I needed this until now, and I don't understand how I live without it kind of moment. And I had that moment again when I got the very first iPhone, and I remember we were all questioning whether it's going to work or great. And within 2 minutes of playing on day one, I sent out emails from it saying, this is the Jesus phone. There's no doubt. This has changed everything. So you get a few of those moments. So I recently saw a video with another moment like that by a product made by Google. And you look at all this augmented reality stuff, and everyone's like, it's playing video games. And it's so easy to dismiss and write, despite Pixar making movies with it. But Google put out this product, and it lets you paint like it's the Mac Paint of augmented reality. But the difference is you start painting and you paint a volcano, and they show, you know, with lava spewing and trees and stuff all around you. And now you've painted your own reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for people with psychological problems, this is going to be a great place to run away from society, because you can just make reality exactly the way you want it. And when you put that helmet on, that's all you'll see. But beyond the kind of swarmy part of it is, it is amazing to realize that this is how design is meant. Like, you're doing CAD/CAM like animals, like cavemen, with chisels through mouses and touch screens, versus you're just going to draw the thing in the world the way it was meant to be. And you're going to make this car render in 3D the way you want to be. And you want to move the fender, you're just going to move the fender. And it is abundantly clear.
Content creation.
It's going to be the future for so many interesting industries. And you know what Apple's got on that right now? Nothing. You can't.
Hold on. There are tons of rumors and leaks about some kind of VR project that's in the works.
Which is a fair point, and I don't want to detract from that. But right now, today, there is not a single machine Apple makes that you can take. The system from the ID
Oculus,
fellow, Oculus, and run on. It's just and the guys at Oculus were very unapologetic. They're like, yeah, we'd like to make it, but you don't make any decent hardware that I can even run this thing on. How pathetic is that for a company that's into content creation, into these vanguard things? It is currently not selling a machine capable of getting in on the ground floor of this. Now, Apple, it's a very fair point, Brian, and I want to touch on an even more excellent point you made. About the budgets for R&D. And I always worry when I see budgets for R&D grow, because for almost every company in the world, except for Apple and Next before it that I'm aware of, those budgets are basically slush funds for incompetence, right? Everything that fails at the company, they're like, oh, that was R&D, right? And they get to write it off and get a tax break on it. And Apple's always been traditionally very light on R&D. So you can interpret the ballooning of the R&D, and again, in two ways. One is the worried way, which is they failed the scale, and that it's a slush fund of failures that are going on and inactivity because there's no product coming out. Or I choose to be a little bit more hopeful, and I don't know how you guys are feeling about it, is that there's something big in the pipeline. Like, hopefully this WWDC is not just refresh Macs. but there's some new, here's our Oculus, here's our new touch.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Here's some new big thing.
Yeah, and I think there's probably three big things coming.
Okay.
Three big things in the work. I think there's the car, there's the whatever Apple's doing in the world of VR, and there's something else that we don't really know about yet. And that's not counting the various products or projects that are for even further in the future. And I think that a lot of Apple's ballooning R&D budget is going towards developing the car infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, you know, the car is a fair point, and there's a lot to get up on there. But if you believe that they're actually building an assembly line, would cost a lot of just tons of money and whatnot. I don't believe that little building that they're housing has an assembly line that's built in.
No, 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 man. Apple's got all kinds of...
Well, then they're greatly overpaying, and then I'm starting to worry that it's a slush fund of failure because...
No. Listen to me. The Apple has put together a multiple large real estate facilities. Real estate facilities. What does that even mean? Large facilities around...
Stuff to hold the car stuff.
Around the Bay Area. And all things with these Greek mythology code names that are attached to them.
As long as they don't name one of them Sisyphus, I'm still okay.
Actually, was one of them?
Sure, it's not on watch strap development.
Relatively sure, right?
Takes a lot of work.
Nate Donato Weinstein, who writes for the San Jose Business Journal, watching real estate in the Bay Area is one of the things he's really good at. And he digs through all of these regulatory filings and permit filings that companies, not just Apple, but companies all around the Bay Area do, and tries to figure out what he can for them. And so Apple has multiple facilities that all have Greek mythology type names. Of course, we know that the car is called Project Titan, and they've got various chemicals attached to them that are filed in stormwater plan. You have to file stuff like that,
right, in California. Right.
And chemicals and equipment that are used in the automobile industry. So. Maybe. Apple could actually be looking to assemble this thing here. That seems weird to me, but at the very least, Apple is doing a lot of R&D on it.
It's not the craziest thing in the world. I don't know if it's quite as expensive as we're making out that budget to be, because they're spending a heck of a lot, but who knows? You may be right. And look, I'm trying to look at it as positive as possible, because otherwise I'm going to just kill myself out of depression of what's going on, because I do like the company and I've been a longtime fan. But it could go either way. Hopefully it goes a more positive way. Maybe it's all about the cars, although frankly they could still do better just by buying Tesla and making, in my opinion, Elon Musk CEO would be more entertaining and interesting company than it currently is. But nonetheless, it's easy to be a quarterback on that when you don't know anything about what's going on, which I don't.
As the employees.
they will be familiar. That's true. Both ways, right?
Yes, both ways. Well,
that was a mess.
That was a bit of a mess. And I'm actually looking at things here. All right. So let's move on from this and then talk about your other favorite topic. And that is what a great speaker Tim Cook is.
Ugh, he is the worst, man. Yeah, he's not the worst, but he sucks.
You are so wrong.
He's such a great speaker. I want to throw one other person under the bus, which is Phil Schiller. And has there ever been a better name for a marketing wonk than Phil Schiller? But he's as plastic man as actually, I'm not sure who's more plastic, him or Tim Cook, but both of them
don't even speak the same way.
Marco Rubio on his worst day working as a robotic automaton is a dynamic guy compared to Tim Cook, who is like the Rain Man of market babble. We got a great team. It's the best product pipeline we've ever had. I'm incredibly excited about that. Hold on. I'm going to finish every Tim Cook speech here. Let me just two more things. We had another great quarter. Apple Watch is doing great. China's doing great. It's growing. Only 40% of smartphone penetration. So we got a lot of headroom. I like Dr. King and Robert Kennedy. And we don't talk about future products, even though we leak everything and everybody knows everything in advance because we can't control our suppliers. So there, I've done every Tim Cook speech ever.
Now, man, you have no room in your heart or mind for subtlety. Tim Cook is a man of subtleties.
You know, I hadn't picked this up at all.
Yeah, John, you so like bombastic, you know, you like big things, man. You like
hair, the 1997 Q&A.
They are different speakers.
Steve Jobs is being grilled. And
different.
An actual thought went through his brain, which was, hey, why don't we answer a question with something that is not a pre-taped canned response? Hey, there's something unique and interesting. Which is, by the way, well, let me just give one CYA caveat, which is Tim Cook's an awesome fellow. He's a terrific guy. He's a terrific manager. He's done a hard job that I would have failed at within 1 minute of being there. And all kinds of, you know, nice caveats should be lauded his way. I don't in any way mean to say he's like a bad at his job or a bad person or anything like that. He just is the most boring talker ever. And if you compare that incredible, let me finish. If you compare that horror show that was the last amazing tour de force of innovation and wrist strap technology that we had an hour presentation for to even Elon Musk, who stammers about 50% of his speeches stammering, he managed to introduce a whole new car in less than 10 minutes and was off the stage with a mic drop, and it was engaging every second versus the hour-long drone fest of platitudes and mind-numbing Phil Schiller-esque / Tim Cook, signature speech rhythms that would put anyone that's having trouble sleeping to sleep.
Okay, first of all, I'm sorry for not letting you get a word in edgewise. My apologies.
Yeah, Brian, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Secondly, first of all, it's clear that Steve Jobs was a better speaker. I won't argue that. Steve Jobs was one of the most amazing speakers that we've seen, certainly in our lifetimes.
Orders of magnitude better, yeah.
Yes. But to miss Tim Cook's incredibly sharp brain, where he thinks fast enough to have every word coming out of his mouth be a considered word.
Same words over and over.
It's not the same words over and over, but to dismiss that as being canned is to just miss like the forest for the trees. He is a careful speaker. Everything he says is very particular. But when he gets passionate about something, I personally find him very engaging. Now, I will admit that I obsess over subtleties. I'm kind of like your bizarro. I'm like the bizarro world, John Keat. I obsess over subtleties, and I really, really focus on the subtleties. Tim Cook's subtleties are fascinating, and he. So John's rolling his eyes at me right now.
Yeah, John, I'm afraid if you roll your eyes anymore, you're actually going to hyperextend your retinas.
When Tim Cook's passions come out, I find him incredibly engaging.
Yeah, because I need to hear one more time how Dr. King and Robert Kennedy are his heroes. And by the way,
people ask him about that stuff.
I would tell you that we're incredibly excited about the things we're working on. Incredibly excited. And the subtlety is sometimes we're really excited, not incredibly excited. And I want to read through that tea leaf because there's nothing more interesting going on in the Apple world than that. And that's actually a pathetic sign if that's true.
Or maybe Tim is really, really good at keeping a secret and has a great poker face.
Well, if he is, it's a rewrite of history because every last release that they've had has been leaked a good month in advance in the Mac Rumors press and accurate to a woefully pathetic level of accuracy. So his level of secrecy, I don't know. It's a ship.
On a personal level.
Was happening under Steve, too. And the reality is that when you have a million people working on something, word's going to leak.
So the
things that Apple is able to keep secret are the things that Apple does in-house, like Apple Watch.
So if you recall, when Steve did have a leak, if you remember, with one of the iMacs that came out, was that the ATI video card was going to come out. It was a day later. He stopped buying ATI stuff for, what, like two cycles of iMacs to punish them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know what? And it shored up. Shock.
That shored up for a while. Well, but once production started ramping up in China, we had just as many leaks coming out as we do now. Well, I don't know, not just as many, but again, we have a lot. The difference between today, where we do know definitively what's coming out hardware wise before it comes, and even 5 years ago, is that production is ramped up so high that there are just too many hands and eyeballs involved in what they're doing.
So one, you're probably right, but that doesn't mean that there's no reason not to try and be draconian like Steve, because it could have some effect. But let's assume it's just a different.
How do we know that they haven't?
How do we know with Steve that it did and versus now that we didn't? Yeah, I guess there could be super double secret probation going on there, but I'm just going to assume that they did. But beyond the Occam razor rationale to this is, let's assume you're right. It's just a different world, and that's the reality. The fact that they keep this, he keeps his robot automaton with a straight face, we don't talk about future products, is laughable. Ugh, yeah, you don't, but everybody else does, so I don't care. Anyway, 80% of every speech I gave is what is my little rant there beforehand. And you know what? I don't need that rehash. I don't need the rehash of it's the best product plate line ever. And we're incredibly.
Steve did the same thing.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Every product amazing product ever.
That part's true, but the actual content beyond the this is incredibly great, whatever, was he had interesting information that was fresh. And it was, if you talk to the fella, you get a real thought. You don't get a pre-canned tape that starts playing automatically on one of his greatest hits. The guy answered the question. And Tim Cook is incapable of getting off script.
Because he's disciplined.
Okay. He's boring.
Now, you see canned, I see disciplined. I've said for years now that Tim Cook is the most careful, considered speaker in the tech world. Every single word he says matters and has meaning. And we've also talked for a long time about Cook Code. Tim talks about what's coming in a way that was very different from, like, you know, for Steve, you could sometimes figure out what Apple was doing by listening to what Steve said Apple wasn't doing. Tim actually talks about things a lot differently. Like, I go back to the way he disparaged netbooks without disparaging the use for netbooks. And I said that Apple would address the demand for netbooks with an iPod Super Touch. I will pat myself on the back for that, because I nailed that one. Nailed it.
Although they didn't go with your name, iPod Super Touch.
Well, but they did add clearly. But the iPad was, of course, the iPod Super Touch. And my point is that Tim Cook talks. He just talks differently, man. He talks differently. And
boringly.
You can't
That's
see
the difference. Boring. It's an hour show that could have been done in 6 minutes at most. It was wrist strap watches. It's horrendous. It was bore fest. Totally uninteresting.
Yeah, I disagree with you on this one, brother.
How do you feel about the new display technology that was introduced with iPad Pro 9?
It's cool. You know, I like that this is one of those things that's almost Sisyphus-like in that hopefully they're not rolling back down the hill. They're just constantly rolling the ball further up the hill in making the display technology more and more accurate and the fidelity better. So it's really was spiffy stuff. The amount of time that they spent on the description of it was fair on the show. The amount of time they spent on a lot of other things was wasteful. But you know, reasonable people can have different opinions. I'm not saying that Brian is wrong, even though he's wrong. if listening to the snooze boar fest by Tim Cook is great entertainment for Brian. I'm happy for him. I want to drill my head when I hear
always him. Always education. You can always figure out something from what Tim says. You just have to be able to listen to it. I'm sorry that you can't. I'm sorry that you need clowns and stuff jumping around with signs saying, "Oh my God, look at this important thing."
I gave you two great examples. You don't have to be a wonderful public speaker to be an engaging speaker. And probably there's never been a greater example than Elon Musk, because there's always, you know, some percentage of signal to noise and puffery to substance in any of these kind of releases. But you watch any of Musk's things, and it's about boring cars in some sense, if you're not into cars, right? But he's very substantive, focuses on the high issues. And there are so many issues that were genuinely interesting ones that he didn't even bother on a very complex product, yet his less than 10-minute intro was far more engaging and far shorter, short and sweet and to the point. And this was not a Gil Emilio-level, horrendous fest, three-hour marathon of drone and sweat catastrophe that Tim did last time, but come on, it's straps for a watch. It was a really de minimis thing that they didn't even really need to do an event. It was a smaller version of the iPad Pro 12-inch model. They could have put up the little video snippets that they showed anyway during that presentation with some commentary on the site, and just had a quiet announcement and leave the announcements for something that's meaningful. And that was not a meaningful
thing. I don't even get that, dude. I don't even get that, because the last media event we saw from Tim that happened a couple of weeks ago was the same kind of media event that Steve Jobs did. The products were iterative, right? You only get to introduce a groundbreaking new product every few years, and Steve Jobs did plenty of iterative keynote events, plenty of them.
They were not quite this de minimis of, wow, we have a new display technology that keeps the fidelity a little bit more in a smaller size and wrist strap.
Completely watch wrist straps.
You know, the display fidelity thing, this I think has much bigger implications, but Apple, for whatever reason, chose not to really highlight that in that way. Color sync has been a huge thing in the Apple world for a very long time, because it's a very critical part of many graphic design workflows. But color sync has really languished over the past few years, like to the point where I have felt that Apple has decided they're not really interested in the graphic design market anymore.
Yeah, I'd call it 15 years, man.
Yeah, yeah. And then True Tone shows up just out of the blue on this new iPad. Now, if you wanted to take color sync and turn it into something that people, that the average person, whether you're a designer or just an average person, could actually really use in a functional way, you would automate it, and you would put sensors into your device to make that work. And I think True Tone is the first step down that path. Now, I don't know if it's going to go any farther, but it gives me hope that Apple is acknowledging that, yes, the graphic design community, the creative community, is an important part of our market, and they're going to extend that to other products.
John, I have a revelation for you. You tend to dismiss anything that doesn't directly appeal to you. This is something I've noticed for years.
That may be the case. Some broader truths that not everything is needs to be directed at me to be great, and one of those is I do like the stylus on the new one. You know, whether it's a revolutionary new feature that makes it a real productivity tool for anyone outside of an artist, I'm not so sure. But it's an awesome tool, and even though I'm not a real artist, I can appreciate that and some of the tech guys. So you're probably fair to a point, and maybe a little unfair to some point, but that's fair enough for me. It doesn't bother me.
All right, fair enough. So I'm going to leave us with one last thought. Oh my goodness, it was like this really rude.
So maybe, Brian, what you meant was you're going to leave this one last thought, and it's just going to be gone.
Here's my one last thought about Apple and innovating and keeping up on products. The biggest piece of direct information I have that Apple has amazing things in the works is the fact that Apple has not had an executive brain drain. Those people are staying for something. Before, you might say they were staying for Steve. You know, Steve kept that team together. That team, the executive team, has largely stayed together, and new people have been added. And, you know, Scott Forstall would be the biggest person, of course, that is gone. And my point is, the fact that all of these people are staying says to me that Apple is doing something cool.
Hopefully that's true. And look, I'm wishing good things. And this could be one of the stupidest conversations ever, because a mere month and a half from now, they could release, you know, 18 revolutions at WWDC, and this will be a laughable conversation in retrospect. And I hope that's actually the case, because I love the company. It's done so much good for me personally. It's done so much good for people in the world. And I just dig the whole ethos, and the stuff that they do has always been pretty awesome for me. I'll give you the cynics version of it too. It's like, well, where else are they going to go that where they make A, that much money, and B, have that much power? These aren't necessarily Steve Jobs like people where they're don't care about a lot of these other trappings, and they just want to.
They could go anywhere they wanted and command any price that they wanted.
Probably. But who has a bigger bankroll than Apple? Who has a bigger market force a bigger effect on humanity?
But you're not going to have an effect on humanity if you're not doing something. If innovation is stopped, you're not helping humanity. And most of these people are rich beyond their wildest dreams in the first place. I don't think money is really motivating too many of them at this point.
I'm cynical about money always motivating people, because I don't have a lot of faith in humanity.
Yeah, but listen, like, I know them.
Well, if you could make the same amount of money or more somewhere else and continue down the path of I'm making a big difference, would you move to that other company?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of an individual question for each of them.
Yes, but my guess is that for a lot of these people, a lot of these executives that are not leaving, they know they can make at least as much money somewhere else, because they're an A team.
Yeah.
So if they're staying at Apple, there must be something there that draws them.
That's the biggest piece of evidence I need that Apple is working on something. And with that happy note, we are like way over time. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Let's see. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, including a piece that we published on Tuesday by John Key. You'll find the links to that in the show notes. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom Recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And once again, John, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much. You, sir, rock. And listeners, you rock too. Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. It's like every week it's like a surprise script to me or something.
I know. It's awesome.
Well, that was lively.